Gentlemen, you're both drunk on cosmic wine.
Welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Mark Sylvester.
And I'm Dr. Richard Schulman.
This is All Psych.
Welcome. One and all.
One and all in one.
All two of us.
Oops. All two of us.
What are we talking about today?
Well, I think that we're talking about artificial intelligence part two.
Part due.
Yeah.
But first,
the mental wealth tip. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about relationships today and our mental wealth tip.
We need We need a jingle for your mental wealth tip, like our mental wealth tip of the day. Something really cool. Drum roll, anything.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'll come up with it. I'll do the musical thing, you know, and come up with it, and it'll all be cool, right?
Yeah, you know, like mental wealth tip of the day.
Some version of that. Okay, well, let's get down to the mental wealth tip of the day about relationships. I give you three tips for relationship. Number one tip, drum roll, please. Shutting down communication is actually very controlling, so you don't want to do that. That's number one. Number two, compromise is part of a healthy relationship. Now, compromise doesn't mean you win. That's not a compromise. Compromise is everybody gets a lot of what they need, maybe not all of what they need. And the last one is putting yourself in the other person's shoes for a few moments is also part of a healthy relationship. So there's your mental wealth tip. It's actually a trifecta today in terms of mental wealth.
I feel richer. I feel richer already.
You should feel richer after all. That's my name.
That feels like it was three mental wealth tips in one there.
Well, I try to give people more than they ask for or imagine. It's good for them to receive some good stuff. So there we are. So
thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Last time we talked about AI, though, it was more on the defining intro and sort of the AI as it currently is, and we understand it, and machine learning and social media AI machines and stuff like that.
Yes.
So as promised last time, let's go down the rabbit hole into the dystopian. Doesn't have to be dystopian, but they usually end up dystopian, but possibly utopian future of AI and where it is going, where it could lead.
Okay.
That to me is kind of what I think most people think of when they think of AI is robots, you know, autonomous thinking machines like we see in the sci-fi films. How do you think AI is going to change the world? Because some of our top minds are certainly completely focused on it.
I think it has already changed the world, but I think the issue is whether we're going to live by algorithms or live by human creative thought. You know, I think there's a war going on. I don't think it's determined yet. I think it's very possible that we could be serving artificial intelligence rather than having it serve us. It's here. It ain't going away. And the question is really, what are we going to do about limiting its power? And let me explain why I think limiting is a good thing. If I have 100 ideas, okay, and they're great ideas, that's expansion. If I don't pick one of those ideas, say, that's what I'm going to work on, then nothing manifests. It's a hodgepodge. So constriction is the only way that we really manifest, even though as Americans, you know, Americans hate constriction. We lack expansion. Without constriction, we're not going to manifest anything that serves us in a real positive way. Because it'll just be, okay, we'll do whatever you want. And I think that we have to have limits in order to have healthy growth and healthy expansion.
Well, and it looks different too from industry to industry. I mean, you know, like AI in the transportation industry, I think has a certain fear factor, right? Like people were really upset about autonomous self-driving vehicles. Now we've kind of settled into it. Like every once in a while you see cars driving by themselves, and you know, it won't be long when most of them are driving by themselves and it's not even a thought.
How long have we had computers, you know, running planes?
Yeah.
Airplanes, you know, with hundreds of souls on board.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend who's an retired airline pilot, and he said, you know, it was hours of boredom followed by, you know, 45 seconds of abject terror, but mostly boredom, because the computer was running the plane, making sure that whatever course corrections they needed, or flying around thunderstorms or whatever they do.
Yeah, but AI in transportation looks a whole lot different than AI in education or healthcare.
Yes.
Or what about customer service? Are we going to get to a point where we're comfortable with customer service? It's already gotten, you know, where you've got your virtual assistants and all of that on a lot of menus when you call wherever, your bank or AI, of course, in the media is, I think, leading the way, the social media. But, you know, what about AI and healthcare? What would that look like? Would it be better at one specialty than another? Kind of the uncertain future.
Well, I mean, what's the leap from, you know, having all the research data on a certain, you know, a certain diagnosis at your fingertips by tapping into the computer and having the computer just tell you what to, I mean, I don't know at what point we draw that line.
Well, and even Elon Musk trying to get Neuralink working in a better interface between machine intelligence or computerized input and human creativity, decision-making, or, you know, imposing our value system over it, morality, you know, are those things that can ultimately be learned, like data from Star Trek, that's what, 400 years in the future. And we've got this android that is very anthropomorphized, certainly modeled after its creator, designed to mimic humans, primarily to make either humans more comfortable or to show the technological capability achievement. But even 400 years in this alternative future, they can't figure out how to program emotions, right? And every time he tries to integrate emotional data into his algorithms, something goes bad, right? He like short circuits, shuts down, goes on some wild goose rampage. So at least the creators of that program and that character thought that the humanity, the things that we're not even sure where they come from ourselves, emotions, morals, that they can't figure out how to program that or replicate that. And maybe
although in other futuristic, you know, depictions of this, Battlestar Galactica, they certainly had emotions. Star Wars, the droids had emotions. In fact, C-3PO is a total nervous wreck.
Yeah.
maybe that's not the chip we were looking for, but the bottom line is, which future are we looking at, and which seems more more potentially realizable? Because we're going there, whether we like it or not, we're already like there. And I assume that when we see robots, you know, robot dogs jumping around, there was a commercial recently about a robot dog that runs out of power, and, you know, because a new electrical car, it can plug in and now it's all happy like a regular dog. That's aimed not at dogs that's aimed at us. What's coming?
What year is Star Trek? Do we know? I mean, yeah, Star Wars, year, I'm sorry.
Star Wars, it's centuries ago in a galaxy far, right? Far away, you know, but it's, you know, it's closer to now, probably.
But although now...
their ships are better, I think.
Probably. But now in the Star Wars, Star Trek might mean that the next star over is a civilization a million years right. ahead of us. And then the next star in the other direction is a million years behind us. So, right. you know, some people think that time only exists in this place and that we're kind of like the Matrix. It's everywhere and nowhere. And we're just seeing the linearity of time played out. So, you know, we tend to assume our level of technology is consistent with the rest of the universe, when in reality, to find another intelligent species like ourselves, which of which I'm sure there are many, the timing is just so far off. They may have lived a billion years ago or 2 billion years ago, or even if it was a million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Look how just this short window, like you said, in 50 years, the technology of computers have advanced. And it's very easy to connect those data points between the very first computers and mm-hmm. then, you know, the computers of the 80s, 90s, 2000s. And then we got these, you know, super, super fancy things, smartphones now. It's very easy to just trace that line out and see where it's pointing. And I think right. that's why Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk and these great minds are so cautious and actually fearful. Sometimes they're hyperbolic in the way that they talk. Like, I think it was Stephen Hawking's quote where he said that, you know, machines whose intelligence exceeds ours by more than ours,
mm-hmm.
that exceeds that of a snail. So it's a quantum leap forward that we would literally look like snails next to these machines, these super intelligent machines. And then comes the dystopian possibility of the dreaded singularity, which is that moment in which the machines have essentially surpassed our own and permanently alter our existence, either through their undying devotion to their creators, which implies a sense of nostalgia they're obviously not going to be programmed with, or more likely enslavement and eradication, just like we would a snail or a bug or a bacteria, and think nothing of it. So that's what worries people.
But I think that, you know, we go back to the genius of Star Trek, which I loved as a young person, still love today. The one episode where the computer, and we talked about this in the past, where the computer is running the ship, the emotional engrams are from a person. So even in 2001, the conflict that the computer has is actually emotional. The reason the computer decides to kill the people who know what's really going on is because the computer has an emotional conflict. The computer is programmed to tell the truth and then to hide the truth, and has basically what would amount to a psychotic break.
It's just like RoboCop had one. Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator had one. Yeah, they ran into, I guess, a machine psychotic break.
So the future of AI, if we look at what AE is, and we can't, and emotion has such contextual issues. There's a great study, and I wish I could remember who did it, but I saw the film when I was in graduate school. They created a perfect human being, loved his family, loved his job, loved people, you know, worshipped, kind to animals, you name it, they had it down. And then they put them in different contexts. And they were at a convention of psychiatrists. And they said, here's a man being interviewed to be admitted to a psych hospital. What's his diagnosis? Well, 60% of the people, the young psychiatrist said he was psychotic. And he was, they had constructed a perfect man in their, you know, as far as they could. So our emotional context goes a long way. I find it fascinating, as Captain, as Mr. Spock might say, how they're going to create artificial emotion, except we talk about authentic emotion. We talk about it all the time with people. Well, is that person authentic? You know, there's a joke that says, how do you survive in Hollywood? And I've used this before. It's sincerity. Once you can fake that, everything else is easy. So when we have artificial emotion, it's almost like jumbo shrimp, you know, or a mental health professional, maybe, or other kinds of oxymorons. Artificial emotion?
Yeah, but then there's another layer to it, right? So you've got like the intelligence and the machine learning. Then you've got, well, how do you, emotions, and then let's say morality or some of the more elusive, like we consider, well, you could never program a machine to do that because it's us. What they're getting at is the third layer, which is a soul, a spirit, a katra, if you're going to go Star Trek, some sort of etheric body that leaves separate from you after death. How do you program that? And how much does that influence us? And then you get into a philosophical, almost esoteric argument, but is that something that's even necessary?
Well, you know, once you're, how far down the rabbit hole do we go? And in the end, what do you believe? Okay, the fact that I believe in reincarnation doesn't mean that it's true. It just means I believe it. It sort of makes an emotional, psychological, spiritual sense to me. But okay, so I wound up, you know, floating around, and I saw mom and dad getting ready, and I said, oh, that would be a good one for me. Let's go. How do we know that if we have a sentient shell that happens to be silicon-based, as one of the Star Treks would show us, how do we know that we can't just choose one of those in terms of bringing that consciousness level, that katra, whatever you want, into that shell? We are just animated stardust, as far as I can tell. Okay, so we're animated stardust. We're animated, these bodies, you know, they're spacesuits, as one of my friends once said.
What are they housing?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, isn't it? We're housing some kind of universal current, universal spark. Who's to say it couldn't find its way into what we would call a mechanical shell?
Well, then there's the possibility that there is no God, there is no soul, that we don't know what caused the creation of the universe. And that despite that, you can still program things that look similar, like the whole concept of epiphenomenon, so, or an emergence property, right? Like a lot of neuroscientists think consciousness is an emergent property of the complexity of the assembly of all of our parts. It's not something that was necessarily designed or intended. It's not something that was specifically programmed, but it's something that emerged out of the process.
Yeah, and once again, we're back to, what do you believe? You know, do you believe that that's true? What, you know, in the end, there's a value judgment based on your experience and, you know, your emotional realities, how you were raised. There's a lot of reasons. You know, I mean, in Buddhism, the concept of dependent co-arising is about that there's more than one reason for anything. I have a pencil here. You know how many things that had to happen for this pencil to have to show up? And human beings are far more complicated than that pencil. So,
and then the machines that become, you know, probably sentience is something that is programmable, would be my guess. I think that sentience is not something elusive to programming in the machine world. But sentience really doesn't mean anything by itself, just like intelligence doesn't mean anything by itself, or AE doesn't mean anything by itself, because we're comparing this to humans. And humans are one little tiny species, one little tiny creature on one little tiny planet and one little tiny time slice. We're so fragile that, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from Neil deGrasse Tyson is, the universe is under no obligation to make sense to you. So we're not going to be here that long. You know, the history of the planet says the human race is not going to be very long lived. Now, that doesn't
I'll meet your Neil deGrasse Tyson with one Albert Einstein, and that God does not play dice with the universe.
Oh, you're gonna invoke Al. You're gonna invoke Al on my Neil.
Why not? Because and then there was the book by Carl Hammerschlag called The Dancing Healers, which is, by the way, an excellent book. And he's a psychiatrist that goes to the Navajo Nation to fulfill some kind of contractual thing for his student loans, and he meets the medicine chief, and he finds out that God does not only play dice with the universe, sometimes he hides the dice where you can't find them, which I thought was terrific.
I think the God doesn't play dice quote was a little misquoted. I interpret it a lot of different ways, or I've seen it interpreted a lot of different ways. But, you know, AI, if it doesn't, you know, a lot of people don't have a connection with God, or they don't even believe in God. That doesn't mean that they don't have morals, right? So it's possible you can program a machine with no belief in God, or, I mean, maybe someone who doesn't believe in God, God has still created them, if, you know, if you're looking at it that way. Mm-hmm. But it may not be an obligatory part of the programming. And worse, if you get a machine that not only is better, faster, stronger in a lot of measurable ways, it's learning at a geometric rate, which we will never be able to do. You know, the human creature's not evolving anywhere near the speed at which this machine intelligence is evolving and technology is evolving. So we're clearly diverging here. And at some point, depending on what industry leads the push for advanced AI. And when we say AI, we don't mean just the intelligence. We're talking about the whole desire to copy a human and all of its capabilities. But, you know, where is it leading right now? Well, social media is leading it right now. AI is already here working and probably tearing down a lot of our things that we hold dear, really. But what is it going to look like in the military defense? Because creating a robot for your entertainment or your companion is not going to happen first. What leads industry and technology is usually military, right? In this case, I think it's social media and advertising and stuff like that. That's not quite as bad. But let's say the military, because the most amount of money and defense and weapons and fear, I mean, the military usually, or the space program, but it's usually the military leads off, it kicks off the technology. So that makes me the most nervous, is if the very first sentient machines or the most advanced machines or the moment of singularity, it literally is a Terminator. It is a Skynet scenario. It's a situation where we've designed, built, and expected machines to engage in and war and identify enemies and stuff like that. That to me is a lot more terrifying, because it will very easily make at least an assessment at some point, like, do I really need these pesky humans around? Or maybe they're all enemies. And it can, like they say, it decides our fate in a microsecond. I wish that there was another industry that was pushing it, like healthcare or transportation or social media. That's kind of what scares me the most about machines.
Well, go figure that if there is a sentient artificial intelligence soldier, I doubt they would have a morality chip.
Don't humans shut off their morality chip when they go into war?
Well, absolutely, because they go into denial that somehow murdering someone in a war is different than murdering them in a back alley. You know, I don't really see the difference, to be honest with you.
But there is a difference when you're an 18-year-old kid and...
you've been filled with propaganda and crap, sure.
Yeah, or you just don't have the life experience or haven't taken the time to ask these questions and figure out where your values are. A lot of people are very vengeful too. So is it worse to invade a sovereign nation? Is it worse to start an unnecessary trade war or skirmish than it is retaliate against Pearl Harbor or 9/11 or something like that? And then why does one American life equal, you know, 6 European lives, which equals 40 lives in sub-Saharan Africa? You know, a life is a life is a life.
It kind of, I don't know, we're talking about artificial intelligence, but it feels like what we're really talking about is what makes us human. Okay, talk to anybody who deals with the stock market. All market trades are done by algorithms now. It's all computer generated. There are certain programs that humans put into the computers, but because the computers can react more quickly to those trends. The markets that we depend upon, and I know it sounds crazy because a report can come out about the success or non-success of a vaccine, and it can rock the entire market. It just did, as a matter of fact. Okay. There's nothing changed in a day other than somebody said something. So the reaction is emotional. Okay. But we have computer algorithms that are saying, well, at this point you sell, or at this point you buy, or at this point you do whatever they do. I'm not good at this. But the bottom line is human beings are not running it anymore, other than we're putting our belief systems into those algorithms. At the core, any of these algorithms have somebody's emotion. And the question is who?
Or right, it's got the emotions indirectly of the programmers.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my point.
That's so like a garbage in, garbage out type of scenario, right?
Well, if you take the point of view of, all right, what is DNA? I didn't make this up, but I thought it was so cool. Deoxy, what? Dio, God. Ribo, kind of rabbi or you know, Rebbe or something. Nucleic, center, acid, burns. So DNA is the God, rabbi, center that burns. Okay, you get a cut on your hand. mRNA, the messenger of that, comes over there with the right proteins or whatever and fixes that cut on your hand. If you get an artificial one, maybe Bill Gates' message is on that mRNA that they've injected into people. I don't know. I'll take God's, but if you don't believe in God, then, you know, maybe you'll take Bill Gates' message. I don't know. The magic of being human. And it does seem like magic, doesn't it? I cut my hand. I don't think about it. It heals. There's a magic to it that if you break it down enough, I guess you figure out what that is, which proteins go where.
But if you keep asking why, you're going to get to I don't know eventually.
Well, no, I'm not going to actually get there. Do you have faith? In the end, being a human being, a lot of it has to do with having faith. We run patterns, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time that we do things or see things. Okay, So you can put that pattern in a robot and they can make a car, you know, put the
right
with greater precision, probably, because they don't get tired. But I don't know that we can program morality.
Well, so that's a really good point too. I mean, well, two good points. One, I think the whole talk about artificial intelligence is like talking about death. It forces people to look at their own, you know, mortality, their own spirituality. And a lot of people are uncomfortable with that, fearful, don't really know where to stop. And then the second point is machines, similarly, because they're going to be programmed by us, they're not going to inherently have a nefarious motive or want, you know, just make a decision to, you know, start a war because we didn't program morality. They will do what they do based on their programming, which completely comes from us at the beginning. What happens, though, is what happens when the machine becomes self-aware or self-learning or gets so warped that, you know, garbage in, garbage out. I think that, like, with the social media, we're seeing how it's changed the way that we think slowly, like a frog in a pot. And then we're like, how did we get here? I think the same thing will happen with advanced machines. As long as we can program them correctly, their goals will be aligned with ours. But if they're self-learning, if they're unmonitored, if they're more going to be programmed to have spectacular failures, which we talked about before too. Like they're going to be able to do these super, super, super advanced things, but it might, you know, trip over a 1-inch thing on the sidewalk trying to walk or something. And then, you know, not be able to get up and you're like, wow, this is like the most advanced machine in the world. And it, you know, can't even navigate a small step or something just impossibly simple will trip it up, even though it's impossibly difficult. And I, you know, the humans, that happens too with us too. Something emotional, something simple, a setback, and our whole programming gets realigned, re-messed up.
And science fiction writers have written about this, you know, that simple conflict. You know, it's funny. As a trauma specialist, what do I actually do is I target the conflict that the trauma creates inside a person. So how does an artificial emotion chip deal with conflict? Well, we have enough trouble with our complex, you know, wet computers up here.
Will you be a psychologist to the machines? Will the machines need the same guidance that humans do?
Well, if you look at the follow-up to 2001, 2010, they do figure out what happened with Hal, and they taught the computer, and the computer guy talks to him about, you know, sort of forgiving himself for having the psychotic break, which was caused by his programming. Now, how often do we, and I'm not a parent basher, by the way, but how often do we talk about conflicting programs that kids got from their parents that created anxiety and created maladaptive functioning in the relationship world? We do it all day long. Okay, so the idea here is we get complicated on something that seems so simple. You know, is it do the next right thing? Is it buy low, sell high? Is it be kind? It gets complicated. Is it pursue pleasure and run away from pain? There are programs, all those programs that we have received or that we may have hardwired into us, create problems in real life human situations. Yeah, approach, pleasure, run away from pain. let's have some cocaine, you know, which is about pleasure, and then eventually will cause pain, but not in that moment necessarily. Talk to any addict at the beginning of their addiction, they had fun. It's almost invariable, unless they're lying to you because they think you want to hear something different.
Well, machines may do that.
Or when a woman is giving a baby, the pain is actually that the baby is moving successfully down the birth canal. It isn't so simple. And that's where the challenge comes in. And will they be able to meet that challenge? Here's my conundrum, and I would love to hear what you think about it. I'm going to throw you a curveball now, so get ready.
All righty.
Somebody, nice catch. Somebody, I'm thinking of the movie Contact, where says they should have sent an artist here, not a scientist.
Yeah.
They should have sent a poet. If you're constructing a human being to process emotions, well, perhaps we should send a poet rather than a scientist. I don't think we're going to, though.
Or send them both.
Well, yeah, but I think that there will be a war that the scientists will win, is the problem. You know, because we foo-foo types like me, you know, are sort of dismissed. You know, come on, that's just hokey dokey, that's foo-foo. You know, get your tinfoil hat and go home. And when you're developing the highest level of processing, I'll give you an example that I love. And if it's been updated lately, I haven't heard it. People with musical training make the most money. People with musical training as kids make the most money. Why? Well, because most musicians don't make the most money, by the way. But something about that opens up perspectives, opens up the mind, left brain, right brain, whatever you want to call it. The bottom line is, I think that's real. By any measure of a doubt, that something about learning music as a child opens you up to things that other people don't get if they haven't had that. Well, why would that be? So if we take recordings of Mozart and Beethoven and Paul McCartney and we put them in this data, like the guy on Star Trek, he could play all this stuff perfectly. But could he play it with that nuance of emotion that hooks you? That's the question. I don't know.
Yeah, he plays it the exact same every time, you know.
And I can tell you, because I have made a couple of albums, I remember one song where I hit a note and it was not what I wanted, but it was so much better that I just left it in. Other times I would have gone back and re-recorded it. So we don't know. Our making mistakes sometimes is where we get the greatest advance.
Yeah.
Not having everything pre-programmed. So I think I asked you a question and answered it, but.
Thank you. That takes me off the hook. But okay. I mean, certainly going forward, vigilance and constant human intervention, oversight is the bare minimum we should do to make sure AI doesn't surpass us in 45 minutes from now or become self-aware, you know, 10 years from now or something like that. And then us go, whoops, it's too late. That's
because when it's too late, it's really too late.
Yeah. So, but now everyone knows who watches the show, so they're going to be just fine.
It's very interesting. If we, this was totally unconscious, and this might be a good place to wrap up. If we go back to my mental wealth tip about compromise, going in the other guy's shoes, not communicating as a control factor, how would you do that in a binary type digital program? I don't know that you can. Interesting thought.
Well, it either all comes down to ones and zeros or stardust.
We are stardust, we are golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden.
So get on it, doggone it.
By the time I got to Woodstock. Well, okay, that was fun, Dr. Marcus.
Yeah, I think I have more questions than I do answers, which is a sign of a great show, right?
Okie dokie, and maybe some of our viewers will send us in a few extra questions because we
please do. We got a lot of great ideas for upcoming shows, but are always taking suggestions. And so leave a comment below and we'll be back next week. Until then,
be well.
I like that.
Almost. All right.
One day. One day we're gonna
do that. Love you, people.